The Attorney General wishes to announce that the following program has been rated
liberal rubbish
by the Department of Justice.
All right, guard, begin the unnecessarily slow-moving dipping mechanism.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Isn't he simply adorable, Pop?
I told you, never trust a monkey!
Listen, you smell something?
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourselves down!
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man and the voice of those like myself who have lost their jobs because of the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration. This is a special bonus issue of the Cup of Joe Show. I just finished episode 10, the movie show, yesterday, which was 3 days after I wanted to finish it. But there's been some news that I wanted to talk about before it fades from the scene altogether, so this will be available along with the movie show. This show is dedicated to the memory of the late Art Carney, who passed away over the weekend. You know, Art's best known for playing sewer worker Ed Norton on the TV series The Honeymooners. Norton, along with his friend Ralph Cramden, played by the late, great Jackie Gleason, were the very personification of the American working man at the time. Let me quote a paragraph from Verilyn Klinkenborg's excellent article in the New York Times about Mr. Carney. From Ralph Cramden, you could learn how New York might eat away at you, starving you with ambition. But from Ed Norton, you learned how to roll with anything life had to offer. What you see in Ed Norton is the guy who always has an eye on himself, whether he's addressing the golf ball or dancing the hucklebuck. He enjoys being himself and watching himself be himself at the same time. And there is the essence of cool, something no one ever expected a sewer worker to have. Mr. Carney, who, according to his fellow cast members, was one of the nicest people you would ever meet, was 85. Now, those of you who keep up with the blog know that I've been unemployed for some time, and I lost what I thought was a sure job at Siemens not too long ago. I had worked there for a month or so as a temp and was expecting to get picked up permanently, but after a few weeks, they finally called me up and had me take a drug test, which I naturally took as a pretty good sign. I mean, these things cost money, and they don't want to waste it on people they have no intention of hiring. But about a week later, they called me to tell me that they just got word that they were going to be permanently laying off about 100 people, so I guess that's that. I have a few more things lined up, of course, but we'll see what happens. Fortunately, I'm managing to collect unemployment insurance, even though I only worked for about a month, which surprised me, but hey, I'm not going to argue with it. Anything coming in is better than nothing. Now, I don't have to tell all of you out there how horrible things are for the American workers these days. It's not just bad for people like me who are out of work, but even if you do have a job, things aren't necessarily great. Let me give you an example. I got a call from a friend of mine. We'll call him Bob. I haven't spoken to him for a long time. He's had a good job for about 6 years now, and he told me he was quitting. He was putting in his notice this week because he's sick of the 50-60-hour work week and the bullshit that we all know goes on in any business. I mean, the petty politics, the anti-worker attitude of many bosses, etc. I mean, he was putting in 50 to 60 hours a week for at least the last 3 or 4 months. Could you imagine? I mean, that's working at least 6 days a week. Now, he was making decent money. I mean, he was making around the area of $20 an hour, but he was dreading going to work every day. I mean, I've had jobs like that, jobs where I just wanted to call in sick all the time and just not show up. And I think it's disgusting that these are the only options we seem to have nowadays. You either don't work at all, or you have so much work that you don't have time for anything else. You know, back in the days of the Honeymooners, working people had it much better. Unions were stronger. You had better health care plans and job security. I mean, granted, they weren't getting filthy rich, but they didn't have to worry about paying the rent or the bills or putting food on the table. And usually it took only one person to support a family. My father earned $6.50 an hour in the mid-60s, and on that one salary alone, he could afford to feed a family of five. We even had enough to go on vacations to Florida every year, and we didn't fly down or anything fancy. We drove down to Virginia, and we took the auto train from there. For those of you who don't remember the auto train, I don't know if they still do it anymore, but it was a train. You can drive your car on the train, and then the train would take you from point A to point B, and then they just unload your car later on. And when my dad retired, he had managed to save up enough money to buy a house in Orlando, Florida. I mean, it wasn't the lap of luxury, but it's way better than it is now. Can you imagine anyone these days making $6.50 an hour thinking about retirement? You're lucky to just support yourself on that salary, never mind an entire family. And there's a lot of people who don't make much more than that. I think you'd have to clear at least what my friend Bob was making in order to make the kind of plans my father could. So, you know, Bob's got a few bucks saved, and he's got a pretty decent-sized 401k. So he's going to take about a month off and consider his options. He's a licensed master electrician, so he'll probably have a better chance of getting back to work than I've got. But I think it's sickening that people have to make these kinds of choices. You know, Bob should be able to go in and put his 40 hours a week, work a little overtime when necessary, but it shouldn't be demanded that he work overtime as the prospect of keeping his job, because that's basically what it comes down to. And he just put in his own notice of his own volition. And I say good for him. Even though I'm sad he lost his job, he's comfortable with that decision. And he's just going to go for it and see where life leads him. And I think that's very good. Even if it might hurt him financially in the short term, I think in the long term it'll be better for his mental health. Better to have that and just a little bit of money than to have a lot of money and don't have mental health, right? You know, you know, let's face it, it's mostly the greedy, selfish politics of the Bush administration and right-wing America that make it so that Bob's got these decisions to make. I mean, all these people care about is money and power, and they're using the government as a tool to get more of it. I mean, these guys define success as a matter of how much money and power you have. But let me tell you something. Once you get to a certain point, money can be a bigger curse than a blessing. I mean, just from a personal point of view, it's going to be impossible for you to know if anybody likes you because you're you or because they want your money. I know if I suddenly get a lot of money and people start coming up to me and being real friendly, I'll know it's because of the money, because certainly no one's doing that to me now, except for my wife. And, you know, and there are people who have lived happy lives who have been poor all their lives. And they're happy. And there are people who make tens of millions of dollars. They're worth more money than God really intended for people to make, and they're miserable. And they're miserable because they don't have that inner security. You know, getting more money is just sometimes a symptom of an inner insecurity. And sometimes people who have a lot of money, their lives can be just as empty as people with very little money, you know. But their lives can be empty just despite the amount of money they have. And I'll tell you something. Some people can't handle a lot of money. I mean, a lot of people who win the lottery is a perfect example. I mean, that's the best example of what happens when you get a lot of money in a very short period of time. A lot of people who hit the lottery, they wind up bankrupt in a few years. And I think that would probably happen to me if I won the lottery or somehow or other got a lot of money, like through an inheritance or something like that. Partly because I know how irresponsible I can be with it. And also because I'm a generous type of person. I get $1 million, I'm liable to go to my family members and say, here's $100,000, here's this, you know. And then before I know it, it'd be gone. And I'd be right back to square one. You know, some people are better at making money and other people are better at spending it, I guess. You know, George Lucas had this to say about wealth. Once you reach a certain point, when you have the nice house and the nice car, all having more money means is that you eat out more. And the more money you have, the more it controls what you do. And the issues that you face, you know, like I mentioned before, whether or not someone likes you because you money, they may seem trivial in the face of all the wealth that you've got. But the truth is that even the wealthiest people can lead empty lives. I mean, they still have the same addictions that the poor have. They have drug use, alcoholism. They just can afford it. And they can afford to keep it hidden, well, almost always. You know, I'm very proud of my working class origins. And in principle, I really don't care about how much money the Bush family has, or even if they've really earned it, because it's none of my damn business. But they're not satisfied, and that's the problem. People worth 10 times, with 10 times more money than anyone else, aren't going to rest until they get 20 times more, and it doesn't end there. And meanwhile, they're making our lives and the lives of people like my friend Bob more and more miserable in the process, and the lives of the American worker. You know, and it's just not right, and it needs to stop. We'll be back.
Here's a dance you should know. Then you hunch your back, start a little movement in your sacroiliac. Wiggle like a snake, waddle like a duck. That's the way you do it when you do the hucklebuck. Everybody's looking for something new. It could be cars, it could be clothes, or just a stylish shoe. But if you like your dancing, better take my tip. We'll get set, we'll on the bandana, let her rip. A little to the right. Get hold of your partner, tell him no need to fight. Push your partner out and then you hunch your back. Start your movement in your sacroiliac. Wiggle like a snake and then you waddle like a duck. And that's the way you gotta do it.
Feet firmly. Hello, ball.
Inside your head, but I gotta chase you every night through the sewer. I've been thinking it over, and I think I found a cure. So don't worry, pal, I know just what to do.
Hello, it's the dog, Lulu. Lulu! Lulu! I say Lulu, 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 Lulu
This weekend, KL Radio invites you to play Whammo.
Whammo is the exciting new game of the highway. No jingles to write, no box tops to send in.
All you need to play Whammo is a fast car, a devil-may-care attitude, and a heavy foot on the gas pedal.
And you may win your room and board for 10 years.
Just think, you may win room and board for 10 years. No worries about making a living for 10 whole years.
And now, here's the grand prize.
For wantonly running down an innocent person on our highways, this court sentences you to 10 years in the penitentiary for manslaughter.
If you don't want to play our game of Whammo, then play safe.
The grand prize is your life.
Yes, I think we still have people playing that game right now, trying to win that 10 years free room and board. I think it's a lot more than that now. Before that, we had the Honeymooners Rap with Eddie Murphy and Joe Piscopo, and we started off with K-Star, Do the Hucklebuck from the Honeymooners. Welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man. I hope you're doing pretty good today. And, you know, I've got a couple of stories that I noticed in the New York Times, and I'm going to get to them in a kind of roundabout way. And I'm going to start by talking about former Governor Mario Cuomo of New York. And this is during a time when mandatory drug sentencing was all the rage. I mean, you smoke a couple of joints in your car and you got to spend 5 years in prison. Got to. No choice. First offense didn't matter. Judge didn't have any choice. You're guilty, 5 years, period. And a lot of that went on because it was really simple and really easy and, you know, made politicians look good and stuff like that. And Governor Cuomo at the time was addressing how impossible it was for a politician to deal with this situation realistically. And as a liberal, this is what I understand. I think about how to deal with problems in a realistic nature, not from an ideological point of view. And I think if you watch what the Bush administration is doing, and everything they do is from an ideological point of view, and how miserable, what a miserable failure the entire thing is, think you can understand how ideological viewpoints screw things up. And this is a perfect example of it. And Governor Cuomo was talking about how it costs X amount of money to put someone in jail and keep them there for that amount of time. It costs X amount of dollars per year. But you could spend a quarter of that or a lot less than that even by having some sort of outpatient drug rehab. Because, you know, the problem is when they're in prison, they're still getting the drugs. They're not getting any kind of treatment to help them get off of the drugs. And when you let them out of prison, and sooner or later you have to let them out of prison unless you're planning on keeping someone in jail for the rest of their lives for a couple of joints, they're still addicted and they're still angry. Okay, some of them are a little more hardcore than that, but the point of the matter is they're not getting the help that they need in prison. But if you try to make a case for that, you instantly get painted as being soft on crime, soft on the war on drugs, and you don't get elected. And the person who is promising that gets elected. Because it's a simple-sounding solution, it satisfies people's emotions, and it really doesn't accomplish anything in the long run. But there you have it. Now, because of the mandatory sentencing laws, it's costing more and more money to keep these people in prison. And now that the states aren't getting the federal money that many of them desperately need to stay afloat, because, you know, a lot of states have a balanced budget requirement in their state constitutions, and they can't make that unless they have federal money coming in. And with the federal budget being destroyed by the Bush administration, basically taking it away from states and from the poor people who live in the states and giving it to their business cronies, companies like Halliburton and Bechtel, they can't afford to be keeping these people in prison anymore. And they're starting to release, and this is one of the articles, they're starting to release long-term prisoners, people who have been there for a while. Some of them drug people, but others are violent criminals who shouldn't be released because they haven't, you know, they're not ready to rejoin society yet. But they have to because they can't afford to be kept there. Meanwhile, the people who smoke a couple of joints in the backseat of their car are still in prison, and we still have an overflowing prison population in this country. In fact, the U.S. imprisons more people than any industrialized nation, both as a percentage of the population and in raw numbers. There are over 2 million people in prison in the United States, and that's wrong. That's just plain wrong, because a lot of them simply don't belong there. A lot of them are there just because of these ridiculous drug laws, the two strikes and you're out, which even Clinton had to parrot, because if he didn't parrot it, you know, you solved on crime. Governor Cuomo was right. It's making an impossible situation even worse. You're not dealing with the issue from a practical point of view. You're dealing with it from the point of view is how can I best get elected? You know, we have, you know, the right-wingers always love to point out whenever you talk about democracy that we live in a republic. And we do live in a republic. We live in a democratic republic. We elect the people who make the laws. And based upon whether we think they're doing a good job or not, we either keep them in office or we don't elect them. Or in the case of California, we recall them. You know, and of course, I think that's a bad idea, but that's another story altogether. But the point is, we have to go on the assumption that these people are professionals when it comes to law, and a lot of them are lawyers because they have to be. I mean, I think if you take the law and you practice the law, it helps you understand better ways of making law. At least that's the way it would seem to me. But we trust them to make the right decisions. But we have this kind of mob mentality when it comes to elections, where we want the easy solutions. And we don't really care whether it's wrong or not, but we want easy solutions. It's like there's still talk of this constitutional amendment about banning, about desecrating the flag, about banning the desecration of the flag. Why? Nobody's doing this in mass numbers. Even the protesters against the war weren't burning American flags. They were using American flags to say, hey, we're Americans. But we got to have this constitutional amendment to protect the flag. Why? Which is just a symbol. But it's an emotional thing, and people are going to vote with their emotions and destroy the very freedoms that the flag represents. But to get back to the issue of the prisons, now they're releasing, in some cases, violent criminals who could go out and commit more crimes and hurt more people just because they can't afford to keep them in prison. And the reason why they can't afford to keep them in prison is because the Bush administration is sucking the federal money out of the states. States are at the worst point they are in, God, since before the New Deal. I mean, we've already really started to take that away, and they're already working on overtime pay, and they're probably going to work on minimum wage pretty soon. You know, all those things that people fought and spilled their blood and died for are being slowly withered away by a corporate-owned government and by a corporate-owned press. Now, the other end of that, and the other end of how corporations profit from this, is in order to try to get some money back, states have to lure businesses in order to get people working, you know, because that's one, you know, that's a big problem. Unemployment costs money to the states because either you have to, you know, pay unemployment or give them some sort of benefits, or you have to spend a lot of money keeping them policed because, you know, idle hands, you know, as they say. Now, there are situations, and a lot of times states will offer incentives to companies to move to the states. And in principle, I don't have a problem with that. But very often they'll give money to a company to build a plant or a facility, and the company simply will not hire the people that they're supposed to hire. Or they'll give an incentive, a tax incentive to a company to keep people employed, and then they'll turn around and take the money and lay people off anyway. This is an article in the New York Times about in Indianapolis how United Airlines was given how much was it? $320 million in taxpayer money to build a place that would employ about 5,000 people. United Airlines facility that would employ about 5,000 people. Well, they walked away from it. They left the city. They took the money and walked out. And it's just a reminder of how much corporations are controlling everything at this point. Because there are bidding wars going on for United Airlines and other big companies to put jobs in, and when they don't deliver, there's nobody that holds them accountable. Absolutely nobody. Because they're paying the federal government's bills as far as paying off the politicians and paying off, you know, the president and the Republican Party, who basically want a government of, by, and for the major corporations. There was an instance, I remember Michael Moore bringing this up in his great show TV Nation, how a company in Boston gave a huge tax break to a company so that they wouldn't cut jobs. Well, they took the money, they took the tax money, and they proceeded to cut jobs. And it's ridiculous. I mean, say, yeah, we're giving you money so that you can keep people employed and keep them part of the workforce. And they said, thank you for the money. Bye. And nobody holds them accountable. I remember Michael Moore challenging. In fact, it was the name of the company was the Boston Company, I think, which was an insurance company, and it was in New York City. And I remember Michael Moore went up to Rudy Giuliani, who was at the time mayor of New York, and tried to, you know, get him to say on camera what the hell was the deal and why wouldn't he try to demand that money back from this company. And Giuliani was like, "Go screw." You know, that's the attitude of corporations towards working people is go screw, and it affects us because now we don't have jobs. Because companies say that, well, we're going to do this, and then they'll just take the money and not open up the place. We'll take your money for opening up the place, then just not do it like United Airlines did. And now they're releasing violent prisoners because the states, who could be spending some of that $320 million to keep some of these people in prison, they're giving it to United Airlines as incentive to build a shop. And when they don't build the shop, you know, Everything is gone, and that's it. They take the money and they leave. Now, it would seem to me that if you tried to make sensible drug laws, you wouldn't need to be cutting, letting all these people loose anyway, because you wouldn't have an overflowing prison population. But no politician in his right mind is going to do that, because unfortunately, sometimes people are just idiots. They're going to vote for their emotions, and they're going to vote for the six-second thing that sounds good to them. You know, and that's the price we pay, unfortunately, for lack of participation and a lack of understanding by those who do participate in the political process. This is the result you get. You get big corporations basically taking your money, taking your tax money, and walking off with it. And then, because the state governments don't have the money that they need, they have to, in turn, cut benefits and do things like let prisoners go and make life more difficult and more dangerous for you. This is the kind of country we're living in right now. I want to take a little break, and we'll be back.
Our life together is so precious. Together we have grown. We have grown. Although our love is still special, let's take a chance and fly away somewhere alone.
It's business to lose since we took the time. No one's to blame. Mind, no time flies so quickly. But when I see you, darling, it's like we both are falling in love again. It'll be just like starting over.
Gallstaff, you have entered the door to the north. You are now by yourself, standing in a dark room. The pungent stench of mildew emanates from the wet dungeon walls.
Where are the Cheetos?
They're right next to you.
I cast a spell.
Where's the Mountain Dew?
In the fridge, duh.
I want to cast a spell.
Can I have a Mountain Dew?
Yes, you can have a Mountain Dew. Just go get it.
I can cast any of these, right? On the list?
Yes, any of the first level ones.
I'm going to get a soda. Anyone want one? Hey, Graham, I'm not in the room, right?
What room?
I want to cast Magic Missile.
The room where he's casting all these spells from.
He hasn't cast anything yet.
I am, though, if you'd listen. I'm casting Magic Missile.
Why are you casting Magic Missile? There's nothing to attack here.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Fine. You attack the darkness. There's an elf in front of you.
Whoa!
That's me, right?
He's wearing a brown tunic, and he has gray hair and blue eyes.
No, I don't. I have gray eyes.
Let me see that sheet.
Well, it says I have blue, but I decided I wanted gray eyes.
Whatever. Okay, you guys can talk to each other now if you want.
Hello?
Hello?
I am Gallstaff, Sorcerer of Light.
Then how come you had to cast Magic Missile?
you guys are being attacked.
Do I see that happening?
No, you're outside by the tavern.
Cool, I get drunk.
There are seven ogres surrounding you.
How could they surround us? I had Mordenkainen's magical watchdog cast.
No, you didn't.
I'm getting drunk. Are there any girls there?
I totally did. You asked me if I wanted any equipment before this adventure, and I said no. But I need material components for all my spells, so I cast Mordenkainen's faithful watchdog.
But you never actually cast it.
Roll the dice to see if I'm getting drunk.
Yeah, you are.
Are there any girls there?
Yeah.
I did, though. I completely said when you asked me...
No, you didn't. You didn't actually say that you were casting the spell. So now there's ogres, okay?
Ogres? Man, I got an ogre sweater. playing knife. It's got a +9 against ogres.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
Okay, but if there's any girls there, I want to do them.
I want to do them. You know, it would be easy to pass that off as a simple parody, but the sad truth is it's not that far from reality as far as Dungeons & Dragons games go. We started this musical segment off with John Lennon, just like starting over his last big hit before he was taken from us. And I threw in another anime theme. This is from the television series Urusei Yatsura, and that's Every Day, and it's by Stephanie. Welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your host, Joe Vecchio. You know, from time to time, I get an invitation to attend, if not participate in, a local event sponsored by Creative Loafing, which is our free weekly newspaper, which actually is better than the Atlanta Urinal Constipation, which is our daily newspaper. The event is a debate, in quotes, between the left and the right on assorted issues of the day. You know what? I haven't accepted such an invitation, partly for purely practical reasons. I mean, I can't afford to eat out, and I don't have a car, so I really don't have a way of getting to the event to begin with. You know, it would help if some of the people who say I ought to go would give me a ride there, but that's not surprising behavior coming from them, and I'll get to that later. Another reason is that I really don't fit in with either crowd. I don't fit in with the people debating, regardless of which side they're on, and I don't fit in with the audience. And they don't really care about me any more than I care about them. I mean, I think the whole thing is just a pointless exercise that means absolutely nothing and manages to accomplish even less than that. I mean, to me, it's just a microcosm of what's wrong with American politics today, because they really only represent two viewpoints. And these viewpoints are represented by the two people debating. You know, but I will say this. If I ever accepted such an invitation, here's what I'd probably do. Before the debates actually began, I'd grab a mic and I'd say this. So, you know, I really didn't want to participate tonight. You know, I'm nobody special after all. I'm just some guy with a two-bit radio show and a blog that maybe 100 people or so read. And I get the impression that they just brought me up here to see if they can humiliate me. You know, because, oh, here's this new guy. Let's get him up here and make a fool out of himself. But you know what? There's nothing very special about them either and about who they represent. I mean, take a look at Mr. Smartass over here, the Republican guy. I mean, he's a total asshole. But, you know, he's got a big audience. In fact, he's got a big audience precisely because he's such a total asshole. He thinks he's better than everybody else, and he doesn't give a rat's ass about anything above and beyond boosting his own friggin' ego and filling his little bank account. And he gets away with all this bullshit because nothing he says or does is ever really going to affect him in a negative way. I mean, he's got a huge support group built just for him. And they'll make sure that he never has to worry about paying the rent or keeping up with the bills as long as he keeps on being an entertaining asshole and handing out the party line. I mean, even when he goes too far and says something that's a little too honest for the powers that be, I mean, they'll just hide him in some safe house somewhere until the heat dies down, then bring him right back again. I mean, so why should he care about how what he says affects other people's lives? Other people's lives simply don't matter to him. And here we have Mr. High Horse, the guy who says he's a Democrat. He talks a lot more about principles and high-sounding garbage than Mr. Smartass does, but the truth of the matter is he secretly believes half the stuff Smartass says. Oh, and make no mistake, he also thinks he's better than anyone else. He just thinks it's rude to be so friggin' obvious about it, as if that makes any real difference. He also doesn't care about how much things are going to affect him because he's got plenty of money, too. And when it comes down to making a decision between his money and his principles, well, let's just say he knows what's really important. Now, what Mr. High Horse doesn't understand, and I'm going to put this to you straight, Mr. High Horse, what you don't understand is that Smartass here has been kicking the crap out of you for years. And regardless of what happens in this stupid little debate tonight, Smartass is going to keep on kicking the crap out of you where it really matters, control of the government and control of the message. Because you see, while High Horse here sniffs at the very idea of using money to support his principles, and the real truth is he's just afraid of losing his money himself, Smartass knows that it takes money to make money. And he isn't afraid to throw it around a little, using it to create foundations and keep people on a payroll so that they can support the cause and not have to worry about trivial little matters like rent and bills. And High Horse here, he thinks he can fight this by building a few more ivory towers where people talk back and forth among each other. But, you know, it doesn't accomplish anything except to give a few more people in his little clique a place to assuage their guilt while earning a few dollars, and a lot more than a lot of people earn, that's for sure. You know, of course, he demands that anyone outside of the little coffee clutch either work for them for free or just to donate money to them and keep their mouths shut about where it goes. I mean, let's not forget that smartass doesn't play by the rules. Why should he? Rules are for losers, and he's playing the game to win. And High Horse here just wants everyone to play nice so that he can continue leading the nice, comfortable lifestyle he's living. And we all know how that finishes up. In short, High Horse is doomed because Smartass is a fanatic who just won't accept losing and is willing to do anything, and I mean anything, to keep that from happening. Now, High Horse here spends a lot more time trying to understand why Smartass is the way he is than he is in trying to fight Mr. Smartass to begin with. But you know, Smartass, if I were you, I'd wipe that stupid know-it-all smirk off your face. Because what you don't understand, what you can't possibly see because you're way too friggin' busy being full of yourself to figure out, is that even if you manage to beat the shit out of Mr. High Horse, which you probably will, there's an entirely different group of people out there who are capable of plastering that ugly puss of yours all over the wall. You and High Horse here have been ignoring them. I mean, you call them sheeple, you call them unwashed masses, you call them every insult you can think of behind their backs. But I got news for you. When it comes right down to it, for every smartass and High Horse in the world, there are thousands of these people. They're here right now, though you may not have given them a moment's notice. They're the ones serving your drinks, they're the ones cooking your food and cleaning up after you. They built the fancy cars you drove to get here, they built the roads you drive them on, they built the very building we're having this debate in. And if they didn't exist, you both have been killed by your own incompetence a long time ago. You see, they don't give a shit about your little debate here. Because regardless of how it turns out, they still have to go to work tomorrow, and the day after that, and the day after that. And if you, smartass, get your way, they'll have to work harder and harder for less and less money. I mean, they've been in the dark about this fact for a long time, mostly because they're really just concerned with their own lives, which is, I suppose, as it should be. And some of them are more aware of what's going on than others are, but, you know, slowly, they're beginning to realize that you're helping to make their lives more miserable, and for the most part, they're going to blame you. Hell, half of them don't even go out and vote anymore. And, of course, you're counting on that, smartass. I mean, the more they stay away from the polls, the better your chances of getting what you want. And when High Horse here, who got his money because of the hard work and sacrifice of people like this, people who he thinks are beneath him, he doesn't understand why they're not blindly supporting him anymore. And the reason, of course, for those of us who are paying attention, is because, High Horse, you're nothing more than a sniveling little coward who won't fight back. And when they come for Smartass, they're going to reserve some of that anger for what's left of you, because you had the chance to take Mr. Smartass down years ago, but you were too busy pretending you were above it all and too busy enjoying the rich and pleasant lifestyle that these people helped create for you in order to make the sacrifices that needed to be made for your future. You didn't want to make those sacrifices because you were happy in your little life. And you didn't understand that the things that you have aren't forever, that they have to be fought for constantly because the smartasses of the world always exist. You don't have to believe me. I mean, history is filled with examples of people who went too far because they were so interested in their pointless little games that they failed to understand that there's a whole world full of people who don't give a shit about them. It doesn't matter if they come from the right or the left or if they're not from any political persuasion. Mussolini, Ceausescu, Louis XVI, Tsar Alexander, they all went down because they weren't satisfied with the money and power that they had. They had to go out and get more and more until there wasn't enough for everybody else. And I'm putting you both on notice right now that sooner or later that dam is going to break. I mean, smartass, you're going to win in the short term. But one of two things is going to happen. Either the people of the U.S. are going to rise up and put you down, or the rest of the world is going to stand against you and take you out. Now, how soon this is going to happen is going to depend on how big an asshole you continue to be, and likewise, how much longer High Horse here continues to be a coward. Now, you know, I'm not fool enough to imagine that my puny words here are really going to change anything. I mean, you know, I'm just this guy, you know. I don't have any money. I don't have any power. I do this little radio show and I write my little blog. That's really about all I can do. But unlike Smartass and High Horse here, I understand what's really going on. The thing is, all that has happened in the past, everything that's happening now, and everything that will happen in the immediate future is happening because of human nature. and humans are still ruled, for the most part, by a combination of fear and greed and ignorance. In 6,000 years of human history, the only thing that's really changed is the efficiency by which we are capable of killing each other and the increasingly sophisticated ways we justify that murder. And what's happening in Washington, D.C. right now is little different from what happened in Athens 2,500 years ago, just as it's played itself out on numerous times in between all over the world. In short, until the very nature of human beings themselves change, things will continue as they always have. Eventually, of course, the entirety of the human race is going to realize how horrible things come and either fix it or we'll just blast ourselves back into oblivion. So you may ask, in the face of all this cynicism about human nature, why am I bothering to do this show? Why should I keep fighting? Why not simply accept things and even profit from it like the smartasses do? I fight because, being as stupid and naive as I am, I'm still an optimist. I believe very strongly that in the end we're going to overcome the darker side of our nature and become something greater. And we're going to see newer and greater challenges in the future, but there'll be different ones. The only question for me is, how bloody will it get before that happens? So enjoy your little debate. I'm going home, and I'm going to make love to my wife while I still can. We'll be back.
I don't expect to be treated like a fool no more. I don't expect to sleep through the night. So people say lies, lies, lies. But I say, why? Why deny the obvious, child? Why deny the obvious, child? And in remembering a road sign, I'm remembering a girl when I was young. And they said, these songs are true, these days are ours, these tears are free. Hey, the cross is in the ballpark, and the cross is in the ballpark. Had a lot of fun, had a lot of money. We had a little song, we thought we'd call him Sonny. Sonny gets married and moves away. Sonny has a baby and bills to pay. Sonny gets sunnier day by day, by day by day. Sunlight. I've been following the light across my room. I watch the night to see the moon of my day. Some people say the sky is just the sky, but I say, why deny the obvious, child? Why deny the obvious, child? Sonny sits by his window and thinks to himself, how strange that some moons are like ages. Sonny's yearbook from high school is down from the shelf, and he idly comes through the pages. Some have died, some have fled from themselves, or struggled from here to get there. Sonny wanders beyond his interior walls, runs his hands through his spinning brown hair. Well, I'm accustomed to a smoother ride, or maybe I'm a dog who's lost his bite. I don't expect to be treated like a fool no more. I don't expect to sleep the night. Some people say a lie is just a lie, but I say the cross is in the ballpark. Why deny the obvious, child?
to say, live and let live. But if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry, say, live and let die.
Wilson, you've done just fine on the Rorschach. Your papers are in good order. The file's fine. No difficulty with your motor skills. And I think you're probably pretty ready for this job. We got one more kind of psychological test we always do here. It's just a word association. I'll throw you out a few words. Anything that comes to your mind, just throw it back at me, okay? It's just kind of an arbitrary thing. Like if I said dog, you'd say...
Tree.
Tree. Dog?
Tree.
Fast?
Slow.
Rain?
Snow.
White?
Black.
Bean?
Pod.
Negro?
Whitey.
Tar baby?
What'd you say?
Tar baby.
Au fait.
Colored.
Redneck.
Jungle bunny.
Peck of wood.
Burrhead.
Cracker.
Spear chucker.
White trash.
Jungle bunny.
Hunky.
Spade.
Hunky hunky.
Nigger.
Dead hunky.
Okay, Mr. Wilson. I think you're qualified for this job. How about a starting salary of $5,000?
Your mama.
7,500 a year.
Your grandma.
$15,000, Mr. Wilson. You'll be the highest paid janitor in America. Just don't hurt me, please.
Okay. You want me to start now?
Oh, no. It's all right. I'll clean all this up. I'll take a couple of weeks off. You look tired.
Richard Pryor, Chevy Chase from Saturday Night Live. That was Word Association, one of the funniest sketches ever written. Before that, we had James Bond, Live and Let Die, one of the movie themes I did not play on the previous show. Before that, we had Paul Simon, The Obvious Child, because the two sides that are fighting amongst each other are such obvious children. Welcome back to the Cover Joe Radio Show. I'm your host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man. And I'll make a real quick little thing talking about the political campaign that's going on. As those of you who read my blog know, I am a supporter of Governor Howard Dean. In fact, I am a volunteer for his campaign. And there were two very important news items that came out of the Dean campaign in the last week. And the first one was that Governor Dean, after he asked his volunteers such as myself what they thought of it, said that he would no longer be accepting matching funds, which means that he can raise as much money as he wants. And I voted for this. I voted for him to decline matching funds because President Bush, and I hate saying that term, but Mr. Bush is already, you know, has been declining it, and he's raising vast sums of money. And if Governor Dean were to have accepted the matching funds, he would have had to limit himself to $45 million, which means that once the primary was over, Mr. Bush would have 4 or 5 months to hammer him, while Mr. Dean could not hit back because of lack of money. Governor Dean has built a powerful organization. He is far outraising every other candidate. And a lot of candidates who were serious contenders a few months ago are falling aside. And the biggest name on that is John Kerry, who fired his campaign director a few days ago and had two other major players in his campaign just walk out on him. And that's a devastating blow for Mr. Kerry, who I thought had a much better chance, but he is in a fight for his political life as far as the presidential nomination is concerned right now. And realistically, from a point of view of organization, the Dean campaign is heads and shoulders above anybody else at this point. After the second bit of news, which was the endorsement of two major unions, the AFSCME, is that right? Let me see. American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME, I had it right. And also the SEIU, which is the Service Industries Union. These are not the only unions out there, of course. In fact, Congressman Gephardt has the most number of unions, but these are the most powerful and most influential and politically active unions out there. And these two unions, in fact, generally don't get along with each other. They are fighting with each other, yet they combine forces to endorse Governor Dean, and that's going to give him a lot more money and a lot more ground support, and he already has more ground support than anybody else in the Democratic primaries. I mean, you know, I've seen people who are supporting Kucinich, and I've seen people who are supporting Edwards, and they're here and there, and that's fine and all well and dandy, but let me give an example. When I decided that I wanted to get involved more directly with the political process, I went out looking for who had a campaign office from the Democrats out here, and the only one who did so was Governor Howard Dean. He was the only one with a campaign office in Georgia. Kerry doesn't have one. I think Kerry's was just beginning to start one with all this stuff going on with his campaign. Now, I'm not really sure what's going on, but none of them have. You know, some of them should just drop out to begin with. I mean, Kucinich should just drop out. He's been in the single-point percentage for ages. Kara Mosley Braun, who I happen to like personally, but I think she should just drop out because she's in the low single percentage. She's just like 1 or 2%. Her fundraising is atrocious, and you never hear anything about her campaign anywhere. They're not even trying to get the news out. Dean's campaign has made a lot of noise, and it's scared a lot of the old core Democrats, which I think is good because I think these guys are the ones that are not fighting back. Lieberman and Gephardt, as far as I'm concerned, not only should they get the hell out of the race, they should get the hell out of our party. I don't care what anybody says. You know, these people are traitors to the Democratic cause. Lieberman wholly supports this bullshit war, And as far as I'm concerned, he can go fight it. He ought to know better. He ought to know better. And Gephardt, thanks to his brilliant leadership in, as the minority leader, he was the minority leader. Democrats lost more seats under Gephardt than they have under any Democratic Speaker of the House in 70 years. And he expresses to think he's going to be a good president? Get out. Go home. And he's furious that these unions endorsed Dean because he assumed that he was going to have the union backing. Well, guess what, Mr. Gephardt? You were wrong. And you took them for granted. Governor Dean isn't. And that's why he's ahead in this race. Now, you people need to wake up and start smelling the coffee. A lot of you just need to just drop the hell out. This is gearing up to be a race now between Governor Dean and General Clark. And General Clark has been having problems lately, too. He got off to a big running head start because, you know, big name recognition and all that. But he hasn't done really a whole lot since. And we're only waiting to see what's happened. I don't know about we're hoping one thing or another. I happen to like General Clark a lot, although I was perturbed by his recent comments in support of a constitutional amendment to ban flag desecration. I think that's one of those ridiculous items that keeps getting thrown in from time to time in the hopes that someday it'll catch on. And knowing this country, it probably someday will. Because, you know, unfortunately, the people of this country tend to worship the symbols of something rather than worshiping the actual thing. I mean, they're going to destroy one of our basic American freedoms, the freedom to protest, in order to save what is nothing more than a symbol of this country. I love the flag, but it's a symbol. It doesn't mean anything in and of itself. At any rate, I want to congratulate Governor Dean for getting this endorsement. I mean, he had some BS going on with a story that absolutely wouldn't die about some comments that he made. But you know what? I'm not even going to repeat that because it's not worth it. And it just goes to show how lazy and how incompetent our mainstream, quote-unquote, professional media is. Because this was a non-story from day one. And Senator Kerry ought to be the most ashamed of himself because he's the one who attacked Governor Dean, knowing that he was misrepresenting what Governor Dean said. Knowing that. And he wonders why his campaign is in the toilet. I mean, I know you know you're getting desperate when people are yelling a lot more than that. So, at any rate, we'll do a quick little thing here, and then we'll be back with the top 10 conservative idiots of the week. This is the Cup of Joe Radio Show.
Everybody's talking, no one says a word. Everybody's making love, no one really cares. There's matches in the bathroom, just below the stairs. So finish what you got. Nobody told me there'd be days like these.
Everybody's flying, I never touch the sky. There's UFOs over New York, and I ain't too surprised.
Staff, are you sure you've decided to haggle with the blacksmith?
Yes, and I'm using my ring of charms, which adds a +10 to all convincing rolls.
You don't have to remind me. You seem to have convinced the blacksmith to lower the price on the sword.
Rock and roll! I use the sword.
What do you mean you use it?
I swing it around to see if it's magical.
What? You can't tell if a sword is magical by swinging it. It's not a lightsaber.
Well, whatever. However, I'm supposed to find out if it's magical.
It's called a detect magic spell.
I didn't want to use that up.
Well, say you slept for 6 hours after you cast it.
Okay, detect magic.
It's not magical.
Dude! He said it was a magical sword.
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Dude!
Hey, look who brought the Mountain Dew!
Yeah!
Right on!
Bye-bye night, the Mountain Dew!
Galstaff,
Mountain Dew,
as you are standing in a dirt road swinging a very unmagical sword, you see the strangest sight. A halfling thief is wandering towards you, singing Fly By Night.
Nightblade!
It's Nightblade the halfling thief, and he's carrying a 12-pack of Mountain Dew.
No way! His character's carrying Mountain Dew, too?
If I roll a 10 or above, then yes. 11. Here's your character, Nightblade. Where's Picard, the elven ranger?
He's coming, and he's bringing his girlfriend... And your point is?
Well, she's going to want to play.
Fine. She can play. Anyone can play. We're a Brown Deer High School endorsed activity with membership open to the student body. I don't care if Greg Erdman wants to play, if he brings his own dice. If Sarah Doheny wants to play Advanced Dungeons and Dragons with us, she can play Titania.
Ooh!
Isn't that your character?
It's not my character. I'm the DM. Sometimes I have to send non-player characters along with you to provide vital information.
Yeah, but it seems like mostly you just end up talking through Titania.
Whatever. Now we have a girl to play Titania.
Hey, guys, what's up?
Whoa!
Hey, how you doing? Hey, Picard! Hey, Sarah, do you know everybody here?
I'm in biology with Scott.
Galstaff!
Ah, yes, the Weekend Warriors return. That was Galstaff and crew with Dungeons & Dragons Part 2. Before that, we had Bad Religion with Sorrow from The Process of Belief. And before that, we had John Lennon with Strange Days. You know, I don't know why I'm on a John Lennon kick today, but that song seems so fitting because we are having strange days. It's remarkable how many of these songs from the 60s and early 70s fit in today. I don't generally like to play them, but today I'm just in a mood to hear them. Welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man. And now, from the pages of democraticunderground.com, the Cup of Joe Radio Show proudly presents the top 10 conservative idiots of the week. And we begin the list this week with Ed Gillespie, the chief of the Republican National Committee. Now, Ed, when he heard that the CBS miniseries The Reagans, which is about Ronald and Nancy Reagan, may take some dramatic liberties with the biodrama dealing with the couple, he whipped out his big 10-inch pen and fired off an angry letter to CBS execs. Yes, according to CNN, Gillespie insisted that CBS allow a team of historians and friends of former President Reagan and his wife to check out the drama and approve it before airing it. It just goes to show how far these people have shoved their noses up St. Ronnie of Reagan's ass. Now, if CBS refused, of course, Gillespie would, get this, ask the network to run a scroll across the bottom of the screen every 10 minutes, informing viewers that the miniseries is not accurate. Now, is this the kind of precedent that Gillespie wants to set? Now, maybe we could have a scroll along the bottom of Fox News saying that this entire network is full of right-wing jack-offs who wouldn't know the truth if it smacked them in the face. Or what about a scroll during Threat Matrix? Now, there's a show that needs a clarifying message every 10 minutes. Now, while this program depicts the Office of Homeland Security as a team of hip 20-somethings who talk cool-sounding cyberbabble and watch live satellite feeds in dimly lit bunkers before heading off to some exotic location and busting terrorist ass, the actual Office of Homeland Security is just a bunch of fat old white men sitting around conference tables discussing their golf swings. Not that any of this really matters anymore, since the chicka shits over at CBS bowed to the right-wing pressure and shuffled the Reagans off to Showtime, where it will be seen by approximately nobody. That leads us to the next person, and that's Mr. George W. Bush himself. Now let's see, no weapons of mass destruction, check. No collection to Al-Qaeda or 9/11, check. And it looks like our great leader is seriously starting to run out of excuses for invading Iraq and getting us into this ridiculous quagmire. But at least he can still bask in the glory of having removed Saddam Hussein and his thugs from power and liberated the Iraqi people from his tyrannical regime. Of course, according to Bush, there's still plenty of resistance from former members of Saddam's regime. He was overheard just last week suggesting that it was Saddam loyalists who were behind the recent attack on an American Chinook helicopter which killed 16 of our soldiers. Interestingly enough, on the same day Bush was making the statement, it was announced that the U.S. administrator of Iraq has decided to conditionally support the creation of an Iraqi-led paramilitary force comprised of former employees of the country's security services and members of political party militias. Okay. So that's no weapons of mass destruction, no connection to Al-Qaeda or 9/11, and now we're rehiring the torturers and murderers and thugs that used to benefit from Saddam Hussein's regime to help run the country. Right. So I guess all we need to do now is withdraw from Iraq, allow Saddam to return to power, and we'll be right back where we started. Minus the lives of hundreds of American soldiers and billions of taxpayer dollars, of course. Good job, George. And speaking of Bush, did you know that last March, soon-to-be former Governor Gray Davis of California declared a state of emergency because of the threats of wildfires? And did you know that in April, he asked George W. Bush for $430 million from the Federal Emergency Management Agency to try to prevent a major fire disaster in Southern California? He sure did. And do you know what our great leader told Gray Davis? Yep, he said, screw you, dude. You see, apparently FEMA's job is to clean up after emergencies, not to do anything to prevent them. Now FEMA is rebuilding the fire-ravaged areas with $500 million that was tacked on to the recent $87 billion Iraqi request, which makes Governor Beefcake look pretty good. Oh, and yeah, sorry if you lost your house and all your belongings and stuff, but hey, I've got an election campaign coming up. America thanks you for your sacrifice. Next on the list, we have the Bush administration with yet another episode of How Not to Support the Troops. It turns out that while the Bush administration has managed to appropriate $87 billion for, among other things, building new schools in Iraq, they're cutting costs at home by closing schools for the children of, guess who, American service people. According to the Army Times, defense officials notified the services in mid-October that they intend to close 19 commissaries and may close 19 more, mostly in remote areas. At the same time, the Pentagon is finishing a study to determine whether or not to close or transfer control of the 58 schools it operates on 14 military installations in the continental United States. Why? Well, apparently, the two initiatives are the latest in a string of actions by the Bush administration to cut or hold down growth in pay and benefits, including basic pay, combat pay, health care benefits, and a death gratuity paid to survivors of troops who die on active duty. For the administration to make these cuts in the first place is pretty damn awful, so much for Republicans supporting the military, but to make them during a time of war, while American soldiers are fighting and dying on a daily basis, that's nothing more than disgraceful. And I want to remind everybody, of course, this is coming from me and not part of the list, Republicans hate soldiers. Remember that. Republicans hate soldiers. And next we have our friends over at Fox News, which maintains that it merely appears conservative and Republican simply because all the rest of the media is so damn liberal. But a former Fox News employee, a veteran producer no less, recently summed the claim up in a single word, bull. Charles Reyna, who recently left the Fox News network after 6 years, published a letter on the internet last week in which he explains exactly how the Fox Newsroom works. According to Reyna, not once in the 20-plus years I had worked in broadcast journalism prior to Fox, including lengthy stays at the Associated Press, CBS Radio, and ABC, did I feel pressure to toe a management line. But at Fox, if my boss wasn't warning me to be careful how I handled the writing of a special about Ronald Reagan, you know how Fox News chairman Roger Ailes feels about him, he was telling me how the environmental special I was to produce should lean. You can give both sides, he would say, but make sure the pro-environmentalists don't get the last word. That doesn't sound very fair and balanced, does it? But Reyna goes on. Editorially, the Fox Newsroom is under the constant control and vigilance of management. The roots of Fox News Channel's day-to-day, on-air basis bias are actual and direct. They come in the form of an executive memo distributed electronically each morning addressing what stories will be covered and often suggesting how they should be covered. What? You mean management of Fox News gives daily instructions on how to spin the news? But I thought Fox was a no-spin zone. Wrong. According to Reyna, the memo was born with the Bush administration early in 2001 and, intentionally or not, has ensured that the administration's point of view consistently comes across on Fox. So there you have it, folks. Only this time it's official. Fox News is nothing more than a lying, spinning propaganda tool of the Bush hate machine. Now, here's another conservative Republican who wants to take us back to the 50s. No, not the 1950s, the 1350s. Dean Nick Reres, who won re-election as a Virginia state senator last week, came under fire recently for suggesting that mental illnesses are caused by demons. According to the Virginia Pilot, a member of the Norfolk Community Service Board was present during a conversation with Reres, which turned to the topic of mental illness, during which Reres said he believed mental illness was caused by demons, and God may be punishing families by giving children mental illnesses. Now, Democratic Underground sources tell us that Reres went on to inform his rapt audience that thunder and lightning mean God is mad at you, and for those of you who think the Medicare crisis cannot be solved, I have one word, leeches. Let's see now. According to Republicans these days, we didn't go over to Iraq because of weapons of mass destruction. We went to liberate the Iraqis from their tyrannical dictator, which we did. And now we're spending billions of dollars of American taxpayer money to rebuild the place and send them gasoline. It's just odd how so many conservatives seem to be of the opinion that rescuing the Iraqis from Saddam Hussein was the right thing to do, because that's what W told them. Except when it comes to the crunch, they still hate the damn brown people. Take this incident in Jacksonville, Florida, last week. An unidentified bus driver allegedly told 10 to 20 children to get off the school bus, forcing them to walk 5 miles home. Why? Because the children were Muslim and many of them were wearing traditional Muslim dress. Nice, huh? You know, it kind of makes me wonder whether the real reason conservatives are so keen to liberate the oppressed Muslim populations of the Middle East is because they're just jealous. Hey, if anyone's going to be oppressing these people, it's going to be me. Joe needs a drink. Hang on. Water. It's only water. Joe doesn't drink. Refreshing water. Next on the list, we have Arnold Schwarzenegger, Governor Beefcake. And after saturating California with campaign ads, claiming that when it comes to taking money from special interests, I don't play that game, Governor Groping Beefcake has started mailing out invitations for his first fundraiser. The fundraiser will be held a mere 2 weeks after his swearing-in, and it is aimed at tapping contributions from Capital Insiders, according to the LA Times. See, despite being a multimillionaire, Arnold got a sweet deal on a loan from City National Bank of Beverly Hills to pay for his campaign, and now he needs to pay it back. And what better way to pay it back than to ask for up to $21,000 a pop from Capital Insiders? Oh, but according to Schwarzenegger spokesman Rob Stutzman, this isn't politics as usual. What's different is that our fundraising policy is different from other elected officials in Sacramento. What's different is that this governor will not play the special interest game. Voters know they have sent the man to Sacramento who cannot be bought. Right. So I guess all those Capital Insiders really liked Jingle All the Way or something. Now next we have David Horowitz. Now, hey, there's nothing wrong with a spot of shoddy journalism. I mean, the Democratic Underground is one of the shoddiest journalistic aspects out there. But then we're not all high profile and respected like, say, David Horowitz. Surprising, then, that Horowitz published this on a blog recently. The email below is making the rounds and is something that defenders of the president in this country ought to know to be better able to deal with. Enron's chairman did meet with the president and the vice president in the Oval Office. Enron gave $420,000 to the president's party over 3 years. It donated $100,000 to the president's inauguration festivities, and the Enron chairman stayed at the White House 11 times. The corporation had access to the administration at its highest levels and even enlisted the Commerce and State Departments to grease deals for it. The taxpayer-supported Export-Import Bank subsidized Enron for more than $600 million in just one transaction. Scandalous. But the president whom all this happened wasn't George W. Bush. It was Bill Clinton. Now, sadly, anyone who is even vaguely familiar with the Internet knows that this in particular email is nothing but a well-worn hoax that's been doing the rounds for a long time. Shame the high-profile and respected, so-called respected David Horowitz, who didn't bother to check the email before he published it. Even more of a shame that he had to publish an embarrassing retraction. And finally, during the Clinton impeachment, Representative Steve LaTourette, Republican of Ohio, was clearly torn about his vote, though he finally decided that America's moral values were at stake and decided to vote yes. Now, perhaps one of the reasons that Lazaret had a hard time making up his mind was because he was busy boinking a Washington lobbyist behind his wife's back. But it's okay, because according to Lazaret, this is a private matter, so there's no need for everyone to make a big brouhaha over it. I guess his wife doesn't think it's a private matter, since she's now blabbing to anyone and everyone about what an asshole he is. He was a wonderful husband and father, the best I ever saw, until he went there, to Washington. I told him I was trying to get him out of the dark side, all that power and greed and people kissing up to them all the time. Now he's one of them. All they care about is getting reelected. I hate them all. Ah, chalk up another one for the party of morals and family values. I want to thank Democratic Underground for supplying me with some good material, and I'll see you all next time on the Cup of Joe radio show.
I was walking down the street on a sunny day. Hubba, 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 hubba. A feeling in my bones says I have my way. Hubba, 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 hubba. Oh, I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, it is good when things are going your way. Hey, hey. My little dog Spot got hit by a car. Hubba, 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 hubba. Put his guts in a box and put him in a drawer. Hubba, 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 hubba. Oh, I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, it is good when things are going your way. Hey, hey. Forgot all about it for a month and a half. Hubba, 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 hubba. I looked in the drawer and started to laugh. Hubba, 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 hubba. Cause I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, I'm a happy boy.
Happy boy.
Oh, ain't it good when things are going your way. Hey, hey.